You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
You're in luck, Brendan, because that's exactly the question that Karine Pickema has put to philosopher of physics Craig Callender at the University of California, San Diego. Callender has been trying to understand why our perceptions are in conflict with ideas about the nature of time in physics, using ideas from human biology, psychology, and cognitive science to help him. He has come to the conclusion that our sense of a flow of time is intimately tied to the illusion that we have an enduring self, as Karine found out.
When time goes by, time is valuable, and when it's gone, it's gone. You may delay, but time will not. These and numerous other sayings, songs, and stories about time all suggest that time is forever pushing us along, flowing from moment to moment, never faltering, never looking back. This idea of a past, present, and future all connected makes intuitive sense to us. But the real nature of time, the way physicists have understood it since Einstein's theories of special and general relativity, looks nothing like this linear flowing time we know and understand. According to relativity, time is just another dimension alongside space. We live in a four-dimensional block universe with the past, present, and future all mapped out. There is no unique now that everybody agrees on. Instead, different people who are moving relative to each other can disagree on the order in which events happen, and when now actually is. And there is no flow of time. So one of the big mysteries, therefore, is why we humans perceive time the way we do. This complex metaphysical question is the subject of a grant awarded by the Foundational Questions Institute to Craig Callender in 2010. I caught up with Callender on Skype to find out how far he has come in answering this question.
Hi, I'm Craig Callender. I'm a philosopher of physics at the University of California, San Diego. My educational background is in philosophy, although along the way I learned a lot of physics, so I have a degree in philosophy, but a lot of interest and experience in physics.
What is it exactly that you proposed in your grant for the Foundational Questions Institute?
I propose to look at manifest time and how it relates to scientific time. Manifest time is when you divide the world in this global tripartite structure, past, present, and future. And you also attribute all these differences to the past and the future. So you think the future is open, ripe with possibility, the past is settled, done, over and done with. And that really matters if you think about it, to the way we live our lives. And yet you look to physics and you don't find any of that. There's just none of it. You just don't have the structure in the physics to even go about describing this tripartite structure that is really, you know, the time you live by. My proposal was to look and see how, assume the physics is right about time, you know, why would a creature like us nonetheless claim that there's a flow?
But before we delve into the research Callender has done in trying to understand why we humans are so stuck on dividing our time in past, present, and future, let's take a closer look at the nature of time as physicists understand it. Dr. Emmanuel Olaya, a particle physicist working at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory in Oxford in the UK, explains.
Time's a quantity that we're all very familiar with. However, physicists, we prefer to describe the world from a perspective of both space and time. And the timing is different between physical systems. The physical system is the point from which you make your measurement. And this difference in timing between the two physical systems is a consequence of the theory of special relativity. Now, this is a theory that Einstein came up with in the early 1900s. And basically, the foundation of this theory is that light travels at the same speed no matter what. If I was to set off at the speed of light at the same time you flashed a light both heading towards a planet, an observer on the ground would see me and the light moving both at the same speed, side by side. And you would expect that I would look at the light and see the light being at the side of me moving at my speed, as in it would be stationary with me. However, what actually happens is that I would observe the light moving away also at the speed of light. So as a consequence, there's two different observations there. The observer on the ground sees one event where we both reach the planet at the same time, and I see a different event where the light reaches the planet first and I reach the planet second. To show how significant this effect could be, let's take, for example, two identical twins, one who's an accountant and one who's an astronaut. And let's say the accountant's based on Earth, stationary, and the astronaut has a 10-year project travelling the solar system at the speed of light. So let's say after the 10 years he comes back to Earth and the twins meet. Now if you look at the age of the two twins, because one twin has been travelling at the speed of light for 10 years, his age is different. The astronaut is younger than the accountant, and that's a real physical effect. There is now an age difference because of this effect of special relativity. The closer the astronaut travels to the speed of light, the greater this effect will be.
But of course, even the fastest vehicle on Earth doesn't travel anywhere near the speed of light, and so we don't see these dramatic relativistic effects in our everyday life. The time lags we could potentially observe are much smaller, and so it is not obvious to two people having a conversation, for instance, that they do not actually share the same now. One of the reasons for this, according to Callender, is that the time differences are small enough for our brain to trick us into believing that separate occurrences are in fact part of the same temporal event.
An explosion happens, emitting sound, light, heat, pressure, all sorts of things that are all impinging on you. How do you put it together so that you think that all of those things come from the same event? So we have these interesting mechanisms so that when the sound is coming much later than the light, as long as the sound comes within about 250 milliseconds of the light, your mind will bind those two together and you'll think of them as simultaneous. And so you have lots of things like that also with the other sensory modalities. People differ in what they bind together, but on average, you know, they'll agree quite a bit, especially as the timescales get bigger. So I can point to something and say, look, the couch is red. And the time it takes me to say that, and for the time it takes for you to process that, the couch is still red. So the way I'd like to put it is that the lag times don't typically falsify the beliefs that are generated in the relevant timescales for salient macroscopic events. So you have all these creatures then going around with roughly the same integration mechanisms, trapped on the time-like trajectories. And so it makes sense that they would all think that there was a common shared now. Because there's never going to be any disconfirming evidence of this at the macro scale.
But it is not just a trick of the brain. Callender thinks that perhaps our tendency to care more about the future than about the past also contributes to our perception of time.
You know, if you think about a headache, and you think about whether you care about past headaches versus a future headache, those past headaches, well, they're over and done. Who cares about them? You probably wouldn't pay that much for eliminating a past headache. But if I told you you're going to have a really excruciating headache, you know, in 10 minutes, you'd probably pay quite a lot of money to, if I could, you know, in some way make that go away. But you would never pay that same amount of money to have the headache from 10 minutes ago go away. The reason why you care about the future headache is because it seems like it's something you can cause, and the things you can cause, you feel greater emotion about, greater intensity, and so it makes sense that you would have greater care about it as opposed to the past.
Clever integration of information in the brain and a greater stress on the future compared to the past go some way in explaining why we perceive time the way we do. But these tendencies don't explain very well yet why we see time as a neat flow from moment to moment. Callender has come to the conclusion that our sense of self has a major role to play here.
We do have this idea of a self, and you think of the self as this enduring object, and memory plays a role because we have all these autobiographical memories. We don't just have memories of, you know, Lincoln was assassinated, but we also have all these memories in which, you know, the spatial-temporal context of the memory itself is in the memory. And you are using these to create this kind of narrative. So if you think about it, you've got this four-dimensional world line on the manifold, and it's just there. There's no flow or anything. But it's telling itself this story based on these asymmetric structure of memories. And the story is a story about this self. And crucially, you think that that self is all there at once, at every single moment. You know, so I've got a left arm and a right arm, and I think of those as parts of me, but I don't really think of the baby version of me and the old man version of me as parts of me. I think of the self as all here, you know, all the time. Everything's changing, but not me. But really, of course, I am changing, but the story of this self isn't. The illusion of time flow is due to the illusion of an enduring self.
Callan then has approached his question by thinking way beyond the boundaries of physics, by combining ideas from human biology, psychology, and cognitive science. He has created an interesting theory as to why our perception of flowing time is so hard to shake. He intends to publish his findings in a book. And where does he see his research go in the future? Well, the future seems ripe with possibilities.
I think by New Year, I'll have a draft of the whole book. I'll probably go on with the research afterwards, but it'll be the end product for now. I've been working on time and physics for, I don't know, almost 20 years, and so I think I'm going to branch out a little bit, but I'm sure I will still be interested in it because it's such a great topic. You know, these different areas where I think Kongsi, and there are probably many other areas in which you could try to do a similar analysis. And so as these ideas occur to me, then I'm bound to come back to them.
Craig Callender and Emmanuel Olaya were speaking with Karin Pikema there. You can also learn more about Callender's attempts to slice space-time sideways in order to understand the origin of the arrow of time in a video and article about his research on our website, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.